we come to our last panel, which is pro-gun strategic partnerships. This is a first. We are running 20 minutes late, so I'm going to cancel the questions and answers session. However, go to the reception. Most of the speakers will be there tonight, and you can speak with them then. Two quick housekeeping resolutions. If you want a resolution, you there it goes. And get your parking thing that you need for the back of your ticket, either at the bookstore or this evening.
Hello again. We've been covering a lot of ground today, jumping a lot of subjects. But one lesson I think has come through from some of the success stories is the beneficial results we get from working together politically and exercising a certain message discipline when speaking publicly. There are a lot of people out there who are not in this room, who don't belong to a gun club. They're not necessarily in a pro-gun organization, if they're in the gun movement at all. They don't read our publications. They don't visit our websites. And yet, you'd be surprised how many of your neighbors, coworkers, and others, perhaps that you haven't met yet, share your values about self-defense and their right to own firearms or other defensive tools. The question is, how do we enlist these people in the political and public information battles that we're all engaged in? Years ago, there were schools all over the country, college rifle teams, schools had various 22 caliber, even Harvard today still has a rifle club. But for environmental reasons and other devices, the danger issue and so on, the size of the buildings that are safe, that's changed. So there's fewer kids out there being exposed to guns in schools like they might have been years ago. We're also competing against the youth demands for interesting activities, video games, and so on. It's cheaper to keep going with a video game than it is to buy some ammunition and get out and get started. But there are a lot of things we can do. Recently, I'm not necessarily in the neighborhood I'm in, which tends to be a fairly liberal district in the city, running around, I'm the gun guy on the block, but in visiting Crime Night Out, block club party and so on, you get to visit with neighbors. And you suddenly discover there's a whole bunch of them who are interested in guns and interested in getting started, but they don't know how. And it's up to you to help them get started. Their curiosity is the key that'll open the door for you. Now, you may not have a lot of easy tools at your disposal, but you don't have to reinvent the wheel. Surprisingly, there are all kinds of organizations, some of which you may be members of, that have programs that are related to shooting. Stick to the shooting first, not the politics. And any salesmanship, way back when, my my communications experience was in the advertising field. And the key to successful advertising is to satisfy a need and to appeal to the self-interest of the people you're talking with. So think for a moment of some of the programs that the NRA has that are not overtly political, you know, shooting programs. NSSF has a bunch of programs. You can tie in with things they're doing, like the Scholastic Clay Targets program, which has become so successful it's a separate program. The Amateur Trap Shooting Association has another youth program called AIM. NSSF runs in large metropolitan areas a first shot and then a second shot program, all of which have been very successful in bringing people out. One program that people can do if you have qualified instructors available is do public nights to, you know, set up a weekend and you're going to run and train a lot of people on basic firearms safety. The CMP has programs, which Mike will probably speak more about, and 4-H, Scouts, so on. Recently, my daughter Peggy, who be more visible tomorrow, and I have been speaking in inner city areas to people who are primarily minority groups, who are primarily Democratic, and in some cases, in otherwise hostile environments. But what is interesting, SAFE Act has played a role in this, and there's a lot of people who probably voted for Mario Cuomo who don't like the SAFE Act because it diminishes their rights. Now, we might not get them to vote, switch to Republican candidates, but they're going to question the Democratic candidates, certainly Andrew Cuomo. The route to these people has been through conversations, open forums held in public, you know, public libraries or various other halls where you can collect a bunch of people and discuss different topics on guns and one of them. What we've been talking about has raised a level of interest now in one that Peggy was involved with. It was hosted by the majority leader of the county legislature, a black Democratic woman, who tended to be anti-gun. There was another legislator who was there. There was a retired FBI agent who later challenged the mayor unsuccessfully in a primary this year. But when she was done with an audience that was supposed to be hostile, the only one who was still anti-gun at the end was a black minister who was anti-gun in the beginning, and he was anti-gun by writ. I mean, it was like something in some kind of Bible he had found. I subsequently was in one with a club that has a youth program but needs help. They don't have a shooting facility of their own, but they work with other clubs that do have the safe ranges that are available. We talked about this very thing that we're talking about here, and I suggested that they build their partnership with other organizations that they might be involved with. I was delighted to see the other day, just 2 months after my most recent conversation with them, that they were hosting in a public library forum a refuse to be a victim program for anybody in the community who is interested. We're not talking politics, we're talking self-interest. And it works. And we're reaching out to people, whether they're young, which hopefully they will be, whether they're already established in their community, to give them information to make judgments of their own. And surprisingly, they usually end up on our side. Thanks.
Howdy. When I first started doing this, a lot of the people in this room were our vision for the future. They were going to be the people who were going to move the pro-gun movement ahead. And we were, at my age, and a bunch of us ages I see in here, we're going to be able to sit back and say, okay, thanks, you guys take it over and do it. It didn't work that way. Never has, never will. So what am I going to talk about? First thing, I'm going to talk about two things. First, I'm going to tell you a little bit about the CMP, because I'm general counsel over there. Second one, I want to talk to you about something that's a little more intense than grassroots that produces results. First, the CMP. How many people know what the CMP is? Oh, good. I can skip that part. Anyways, we run all the national matches. We run a lot of matches having to do with youth. Our main thrust is to have youth start shooting. We found two things. First, if youth start shoot pellet guns, air guns most of the time, their parents come along and they become pro-gun. They're looking, they're watching it in action, and it affects them. Second thing it does is all those people who participate in those become spectacular citizens. They obey all the laws. They're very rarely people who get arrested for committing crimes. Why? Well, because shooting has rules. You shoot a bullseye, you get 10 points. You shoot a 9, you don't get 10 points. And if you don't collect all the points so that you're the highest shooter, you don't win. Nothing like 4 and 3 is 9 close enough. Okay, let's move on. It's an exact area. It has rules, and kids are trained to follow those rules. Anyways, we've seen a great success. We have 2 state-of-the-art air gun ranges, all electronically scored. If you haven't shot someplace that's electronically scored, I have to tell you, it's amazing. You don't shoot just 10. You shoot 10.1, 10.2, 10.3, the closer you get to the center of the X. Very interesting how it affects the outcome of the scores. Okay, enough about CMP. We also sell grants, by the way, and I have to tell you that all the people who are saying that we're going out of business because the president's going to stop the influx of grants are wrong. We get our firearms from the Department of the Army by operation of law. We don't import anything. Okay, so what I'm about to tell you, because I'm obliged by my boss to tell you this, is in no way any of the opinion of the Civilian Marksmanship Program, any of its directors, etc. This is my opinion. So if it's right, I get the credit. If it's wrong, I'll make an excuse. I've said this a lot of times standing at a podium in different venues. One of the keys to... Well, let me ask you a question. How many of you would like to be able to stand toe-to-toe, face-to-face with a legislator and tell them what you think? Well, I have a way for you to do that. I'm going to tell you a story about a guy who decided to become a committee man in a political committee. And this committee was a Republican committee. And the guy went and did his job. He went out. I don't know if you know about committees and how they work, but committees are a group of people in a given area, usually a county. They're made up of representatives of what they call precincts or districts, which usually have about 1,000 voters in them. In essence, those committee members represent those 1,000 voters. So when it comes to do something in that committee, when they vote, they're voting like a representative for 1,000 or more voters. Okay, so this guy went and he went to work for the committee, became a committee man, worked hard, walked around his precinct saying, you know, vote for this guy, vote for that guy. And it dawned on him finally that, you know, he had a whole lot of power in his hand, because in a lot of elections, 1,000 vote difference is a win or lose. And if this guy got his wife involved, she could bring in more votes. So it's a big deal to be a county committeeman. So this county committeeman worked hard, kept going, went to all the meetings, delivered all the material out to all the people that lived in his district, talked to his neighbors about which party to vote for, who to vote for, gave them information, volunteered to give them rides to the polling places, got on the phones, did the call to get out the vote, did the whole magilla that a committee man does. And pretty soon this guy got to be the chairman of the committee. Now, as the chairman of the committee, a pretty powerful individual with respect to state politics, because now he represents all those thousands of people collectively represented by all the committee members. He gets to talk to every politician. So this guy went on. He ended up playing golf with our former vice president. Also had lunch with the president. Visited a number of places where people normally just can't get in. But because he was a political animal, because he was a political animal, he was able to get in there. And he got to talk to everybody, to governors, presidents, senators, anybody you can think of, stand toe-to-toe and say, this is what I think. I think you should not do this. How do I know this? I was the guy. For whatever it was, I stood toe-to-toe with a couple of presidential hopefuls, and I asked them flat out, what is your position on guns? And they said, well, I think they should be regulated. And I said, I'm not going to support you, and I'm going to make sure that all the thousands of people in my district know that you're anti-gun. I'd like to talk to you more, but that's the thing to do. Get yourself involved. Thank you.
Good afternoon. I know it's been a long day. I'll try to make this as brief as possible. Unlike the CMP, you have no idea what organization I'm from. So I am going to, or most of you at least. So let me just quickly tell you about Commonwealth Second Amendment, or COM2A, because it'll be important to understand that, to understand what I'm going to talk about when it comes to alliance building. Unlike the previous two speakers, I'm not going to be speaking about alliance building on a personal level as far as developing new shooters and what have you. Mine is going to more come from the perspective of an organization. Now, COM2A started a couple of years ago, 3.5 years ago. Three executive members and 5 board members. We're all volunteer. We very deliberately chose to create a nonpartisan 501c3 to do litigation with regards to Massachusetts and the Northeast gun rights. And it's simply about litigation and education, similar to SAF. So we do no lobbying whatsoever. We are only a 3-year-old organization. We have 5 cases in federal court, 1 case in state court. We have 2 more coming on the way, and our revenues are somewhere in the neighborhood of $50,000 to $70,000 a year. That is a lot of cases to do on that little amount of revenue. Remember, we're volunteer. I don't get paid, neither do the other three executive members, and we definitely don't pay the board members. How are we able to accomplish this? Alliances. Two of those cases are funded by SAF. Two of those cases are funded by NRA. One of those cases is funded by SAF. One of our first cases, which is our only case to actually come to completion, was a win, and that was funded by SAF. Yes. And it was a decisive win. That first case was about a alienage. It was about the restriction in Massachusetts to be able to get an LTC for anyone who is a legal resident of the United States but not a citizen. You know who one of our partners, silent partners, were in that? The ACLU. We actually got a significant amount of very important information from two ACLU lawyers, one Massachusetts local and the other from Kentucky, who gave us a lot of information to help us win that case. They wouldn't do it publicly, but they'll do it privately. And that's the kind of alliance building you need to do. You need to get involved with other organizations who have similar interests, or at least interests that intersect yours. That's really important. If you're a part of an organization, doing it on your own without coordination is going to basically waste resources, waste your own precious resources, no matter how large an organization you have. So another example is a case that we filed very recently, about 2.5 months ago, specifically to a prohibition in Massachusetts on the ability to get an LTC or a license to carry, which is required for possession of guns in Massachusetts. If you have any conviction for any sort of drug conviction that had a day in jail or longer. So obviously we were going to go for pot because it's the easy one, right? Especially since it's been legalized in Massachusetts. So we didn't just kind of do our thing locally. We went to organizations like Normal and other marijuana-related organizations to search for plaintiffs, to help find plaintiffs. We had a few of our own, and we worked with those other organizations to find plaintiffs and to actually publicize the case and to make sure they knew that we were working for their interests. Now, that's not just another example. Now, that case still hasn't come to resolution. We also, because of what we do, we also work with lawyers within the state. Now, people can get very territorial. What we've done is very early on, we decided we were not going to have one lawyer to do everything. We were not going to put all our eggs in one basket. We have multiple lawyers around the state. We also make those lawyers work with each other. We don't tolerate kind of the infighting. And we get together with those lawyers and make sure that we share information. We share what's happening within the state. We also try to talk to as many lawyers who are interested in the Second Amendment within Massachusetts as possible. Why? Because then we get information very quickly. We know that Chief Gem in Worcester, Massachusetts, has in the last 2 weeks just decided to change his issuance policies after he just went in front of a federal judge and changed them up to 3-4 months ago. So, but we are able to get that information very quickly, and if it needs to be actionable, we can do that. We've also working on some cases quietly where information that came to us very quickly allowed us to intercede in those cases, and we're trying to very quietly get some of those cases taken out of the dockets because they could be bad for gun rights in general. So another example of how we've leveraged alliances. One of our board members happens to be the owner of Northeast Shooters, which is the premier New England forum for firearms owners. Instead of creating our own forum and trying to create our own user base, we basically said, Derek, would you like to join up with us and become a board member and leverage? And that's exactly what happened. And we were able to get together, and we were able to bootstrap an organization by two guys working part-time, you know, for nothing. And we were able to bootstrap an organization now that we have 10,000, we have our database contacts of 10,000 people, and we're able to raise money, and we were able to go from $0 to $70,000 a year in revenues within 3 years. And it was all because of those alliances. So, again, I want to try to keep this brief, so I'll stop there. But let me just reiterate, working with others and coordinating your efforts, especially in areas like litigation, is extremely important. It makes sure that you don't waste your resources, you don't waste the resources of other organizations. You know, there's other organizations that we're working with. There's other, and we're actually going to be working with a libertarian organization in the next coming months or whenever. You know, so it goes well beyond just Massachusetts. It goes, you know, this is a Washington organization. We goes well beyond just the local borders that we work in. And by being able to leverage all that, you're able to get resources, not just money, time, plaintiffs. Plaintiffs, I can't stress to you, even though we're a small organization, plaintiffs are harder to find than money. It's that difficult. People don't want to step up, or they're scared, they're afraid to step up, especially in a place like Massachusetts. Leveraging these alliances, leveraging these partnerships has allowed us to find the plaintiffs we need when we need them. When police departments go into court and lie to the judge and say, "Oh, we don't do that, Your Honor," we're able to tap our database and the databases of all our partnering organizations to find people who can say, "No, you've lied." And we just did it recently with the case that we have with David Jensen, our Carey case. We were able to stuff that right back in their face within days. Anyway, thank you very much.
And I can attest to what COM2A has done, and I think I remember being at the meeting in some, where were we?
We were in Massachusetts in a hotel.
And that's when they said, "We want to do something." We said, "Go for it." But again, we said, "We don't want to control it. We want you guys to do it because we need to all spread around and get as many different kinds of people involved." So, with that, I want to thank you for being with us for the Saturday session. We have a very, very nice reception.